Nestine is a ruthlessly aggressive, intelligent alien life form. The Nestines can put life into anything made of plastic.
Creatures made of affection.
Destroy. Total destruction.
I came to warn you.
An old acquaintance has arrived on this planet.
Who the heck are you?
I am usually referred to as the Master.
Death is always more frightening when it strikes invisibly.
Hey there, guys, and welcome to another episode of Who's to Review, where we review classic Doctor Who. And boy, this was a great episode, Benjamin. What episode was it?
Oh, it was an absolute classic, Tom. It was called Terror of the Autons, I like to call it, Terror of the Autons.
Oh, yeah, it's got John Pertwee, and it's the first episode of The Master, and Doctor Who, he's really fantastic in his Doctor Who.
But in all seriousness, guys, hi, and welcome to Who's to Review.
Hello.
I'm your host, Ben Holt, and I'm with Tom Denham.
Hello.
And now that we've got the silliness aside, it's time to get into Terror of the Autons.
Now, I was rather interested when you decided to choose this one, Ben, because this is one of the ones you've chosen to do for the podcast.
Yes, I was. Well, you know, we have to have a bit of a look around at the massive collection you had, and I figured episode 4... we've had 2 Sylvester McCoys, we've had a Tom Baker.
Mm.
Let's change the game up again. And I know that this Doctor gets a lot of praise, and it was a different era again.
Mm. Yeah.
So I dug into the archives and chose a bit of John Pertwee, a bit of Terror of the Autons. And what episode is this? Where does this fit in?
This is episode 1 of season 8, or story 1 of season 8.
Ah, right. And it was written by Robert Holmes, who amazingly just so happened to do the last episode we reviewed. He wrote that as well, which was The Talons of Wang Chiang.
That's right. Would you like to read us the blurb for this story?
Yeah, absolutely delighted. The Doctor is still trapped on Earth and unable to use the TARDIS, but the Time Lords are looking out for him. They send warning that the Master has arrived, and the Doctor soon discovers that the evil Time Lord is working alongside the Nestine consciousness, controller of lethal Auton creatures. Once again, the planet is in terrible danger. Can the Doctor and his new assistant, Joe Grant, save it before it's too late and the true terror of the Autons is revealed? Mm. Tom, where do we start? Take us away.
Well, the good thing, the reason why I was so happy why you chose this one, it's not the best of stories, but it's a really good introduction to the Pertwee era, I think. It really sets up a lot of keystones in what the future looks like for this specific era. You have your core characters who are already introduced, the Doctor and the Brigadier. We saw Liz Straw last season, who's departed, but we now have Joe Grant,
played by Katie Manning.
Yes, and Richard Franklin, who plays Mike Yates. And we also had John Levine last season, who plays Sergeant Benton, who's come back. But this is also the introductory episode for the Master, played by none other than Roger Delgado.
And how good was he in this?
He was really, really riveting, I think.
He just had incredible presence on screen. You couldn't take your eyes away from him.
No. And just whenever he entered a room and that little medley...
That little trill,
it becomes quite a signature thing about this era of the Pertwee stories or the Pertwee run.
It just sends a bit of a shiver up your spine, doesn't it, when you hear it? Yeah, it was a little bit unsettling, but gosh, he was good. And unfortunately, a tragedy would actually occur in real life for this actor.
Yeah, when they were going to film his last story before it kind of entered production, he passed away. He was hit by a car, and it was just a real sad thing to happen for all of the cast and crew. But it was really sad, but because Roger Delgado was such a good actor, and you can really see in this era that the cast and crew really got along well. They were kind of, it was a Doctor Who family at this point in time, and
Was just a massive loss, wasn't it?
It really was, because Pertwee and Delgado, I feel like they were close friends, and from the documentaries that you can see on the DVDs, especially on the Frontier in Space DVD, which is worth getting in the Dalek World box set, just for the documentary that they give on Roger Delgado. It's a real nice tribute, and they do go into a lot of depth about their friendship there, and Katie Manning gives some good words there.
Yeah, it was a massive loss. It was very sad, but he was replaced, and the Master did continue.
He did in
future serials.
He came back in The Deadly Assassin, which was a Tom Baker episode, and it was played by none other than Peter Pratt.
Peter Pratt.
And he only featured in one episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Just a one-off. Well, there is tons to talk about on this episode here today, and yeah. I think we have to just mention right off the bat, I cracked up laughing at this. This was fantastic. The hilarious Time Lord representative. My goodness. You have to see this scene just to believe it. Yep, that's right.
Hello, Doctor.
Yeah, that's right. So pretty much John Pertwee, he's climbed to the top of this tower.
This telescope, yeah.
Because he's trying to investigate what's going on. And this Time Lord representative just pops. He's just floating in the sky.
In a bowler hat and suit with a cane.
It was unlike anything.
It was the most inconspicuous way for a Time Lord to enter on Earth.
Oh gosh, yeah. It was funny. But the funny moments don't end there.
They're not jarring as well. They really fit with the story.
They do. But one thing that this episode did so well is it set up these just fantastic death sequences. Now, usually, I'm not someone that praise death or anything like that, but when it comes to Doctor Who death scenes, they can be quite comedic at times, especially these classic episodes.
There was one that I definitely appreciated. I guess one of the great things about them, they built up so much to them. There was like, they started with something and there'll be another cutscene and then there'll be another cutscene and then there'll be a cutscene where the death actually occurs. So there'll be an element that's introduced. For instance, in this death scene, there was the black plastic chair.
Yes.
And then they got his name escapes me right now, but they got him to sit down in the chair and he was slowly...
Oh, that was McDermott.
Yes.
Yes, McDermott. Yeah. That was hilarious. And it just starts suffocating his face.
The black gooey plastic.
And once you saw his arms go down, you knew that was it.
That was the end of him.
My personal favourite was actually that troll doll that looked like it was made out of plasticine. And that man escapes me at the moment. He was driving it home.
Oh, John.
John.
Yeah,
John.
I can't remember his surname, but his first name was John.
Yeah, John was driving it home. And then... he was sitting down and he was thinking the doll was a bit odd. Next minute it runs up and strangles him.
That one they really built up.
They did. And his feet falling off the couch. Yes. And I was saying to Tom, I reckon every classic episode of Doctor Who has to have a signature scream.
It does.
That generally the lady will do. And this was like no other.
It was, yes.
It was so good. It was but it was quite funny.
It was.
Oh, gosh. So Jo Grant, it's her first appearance.
It is.
In this episode.
To be honest, I feel like Jo, in the first part significantly, she doesn't have a huge amount of stuff to do. But I think that kind of lifts up after this story. It definitely gets better, but she is definitely portrayed a bit ditzy in this first story. I'm not hugely aware of how early Robert Holmes is as a Doctor Who writer at this point in time, but I definitely feel, since watching Talents of Wen Chiang in our last episode, it still feels very early for Robert Holmes.
Yeah, I agree with
that. And I definitely think his characterization of characters later on in the series is definitely a lot more stronger than what it is now.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. He's able to build up tension and a lot more interesting things kind of come together, whereas this was very early on and he was still just trying to work out how to write the best possible script. It's not to say the script is bad.
No.
But it wasn't as captivating as like Talons, was it?
Yeah. In terms of Jo, I definitely think she definitely has a lot more room for improvement beyond here. But as the story continued, she definitely mellowed with John Pertwee's Doctor, I think.
And another thing that's worth discussing is actually the set design. It feels a bit more stripped back here, a bit more bare bones. Was that just reminiscent of this era of Doctor Who?
I think so, because of the whole militaristic nature of UNIT. You'd assume that such environments would be very bare. But I have to say, one of the sets that I adore most in this period, especially for this episode, is the Doctor's Laboratory.
Oh, that looked excellent.
It definitely changes from season to season a little bit, but where it looks now in this story, I think it's like maybe one of two stories where it ever looks like this. It's really nice. You've got the spiral staircase, and you've got the TARDIS in the corner, and the Bunsen burners and stuff all set out, and it has the Doctor written on it.
And that's another weird thing. The TARDIS doesn't feel like it has as much of a preference here. He more drives around in his car.
Because this is your first full Pertwee that you've seen,
isn't it? It is.
Bar the Five Doctors, which you've seen.
Oh, I have seen that.
But this is... It's a very different kind of story line for you to kind of follow, because he is used to the TARDIS for going from one place to another. But we just have the Doctor's car, Bessie, just driving him.
He's flying around. Well, not actually flying, he's driving it around.
Yeah.
But, it did feel a bit different to me.
It did.
And even just the tone of the episode, I was getting a real James Bond vibe out of this.
There's a very Bond-esque vibe about the John Pertwee here on a whole. Especially, he feels very Roger Moore-esque, I believe.
I'd agree with that. With
the frills. And,
yeah, definitely the costuming.
Yeah, and you're quite a bit of a Bond fanatic
A little bit of a Bond fanatic. Which, if we ever wanted to do a Bond podcast, that'd be pretty cool.
It would be. We'll
review all the movies. That'd be, but that's for another time.
It is.
What did you think of the score? Now, Dudley Simpson, he came back for this one.
He did. And we definitely talked about Dudley Simpson in our last podcast. Yeah,
we praised him in the last one. Are you going to praise him again?
I will, but not as much. No. This score is very, very different from Talons Away.
Oh, yes, it's night and day.
Yeah, a lot more electronica, I think, which is very savvy in the Pertwee era. It definitely had its peaks and moments, especially in that sequence where the awesome policemen drive the Doctor and Joe into the quarry, and there's that sting.
That's right. In the music. Yes.
And, there's a lot of nice moments like that where the music just kind of picks up. And electronic music in this day and age, for this time, was almost revolutionary. And they definitely tried to use it as much as they could for that reason with the Radiophonic Workshop and all that.
It wasn't something that was happening all the time, that's for sure, back then. Yeah. No, it's very, very interesting. What did you think about the circus? excuse me.
Not much, to be honest.
Yeah. You didn't like the circus much.
Not that I didn't like it. It was just kind of there. It didn't have much purpose in the story, I think.
I agree. It felt just tacked on.
Yeah.
Whereas in an episode like Greatest Show in the Galaxy,
it's there for a purpose.
It was absolutely there for a reason. Whereas in this, it just felt kind of thrown together.
Yeah.
Really, you could have taken out those scenes altogether, I think.
Yeah. Now, having seen the Orsons before, this is their second story, by the way, that they've appeared in.
And I think they've appeared in maybe, was it four? Probably in four over 50. Four or five.
Yeah. Spearhead from Space being their debut story kind of makes Terror of the Orsons look a little bit like a rehash of Spearhead, but just with the Master in it instead, which I can't complain about. Because for the time, if you look at the Daleks, for instance, like in the 60s, people saying we want more Daleks. So they kind of do a bit of a rehash of the same story with a few different changes here and there. And it definitely feels like this story suffers that same syndrome.
Okay. Yeah, I could probably agree with that.
Yeah, but you haven't seen Spearhead from Space yet, have you?
Oh, only the first part of it. Yeah. I remember you showed me a bit of a teaser.
Yeah, you may understand once you see the full thing.
Mm.
But I definitely think those are my faults. Not to say that I didn't like this story, but Yeah, I guess that's my overall opinion of how it was.
Yeah, it's definitely not the strongest classic Doctor Who episode I've ever seen. I was entertained.
Me too.
But I wasn't hanging for each part. Well, you know, when the credits were coming up, I was just kind of going, oh, okay, yeah, cool.
Although, with this one as well, it did seem to pass really quickly.
It did. It went quite fast. It clocks in at 1 hour and 34 minutes for four parts, which is fine. I mean, the previous one we reviewed went for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a difference here.
Yeah, but it still went really consistently. Like, one of the things that holds up the Pertwee era overall is the character ensemble. You've got the Doctor, you've got Joe, you've got the Brigadier, Mike Yates.
Who, you've met Mike Yates?
I have indeed. Yes. At Lords of Time.
Oh, yeah, that would have been fantastic. It's a
good convention. You should all check it out when it comes around again, if that does happen. But, yeah, you've got these really core characters from here on in. They're consistent throughout majority of the Pertwee era. Sure, Joe is soon replaced by Sarah Jane. But for the next three or so seasons, this is what Doctor Who looks like.
This is it. You better like it.
Yeah.
If you're going to watch John Pertwee.
And I guess from here, it definitely does pick up. Like, you get stories like The Mind of Evil and The Demons and Claws of Axos. They really do pick up, and
they're all fairly popular stories from what I can gather.
They are, yeah, yeah. And especially once we get to the 10th anniversary season and the TARDIS starts to work again, it definitely...
Beautiful. Yeah, it all starts to come together.
It does, yeah. Now, we got to devote a bit of the podcast to this. We did mention him before, but Roger Delgado, as the Master, what are your thoughts so far?
Oh, his presence on screen is undeniable. I've never seen someone that naturally just looks that evil.
Yeah.
As soon as we see him, he's revealed pretty much in the first or second frame of part one.
Yeah.
He just walks out. I just went right away, wow.
Yeah.
This guy means business.
And you have seen the Master before.
I've seen him in the TV movie.
You've seen Eric Roberts, you've seen Anthony Ainley, you've seen Jacoby, Sim, and Gomez.
So I've seen a few incarnations, but I think this one... Robert Delgado, absolutely the best, bar none.
Yeah, I think I have seen all of his episodes. I definitely think he is the best Master, no doubt. And, yeah, I think that's one of the really captivating things about this era. He was intended as the Doctor's Moriarty. If you don't know, Moriarty is the villain of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, right.
And that's another element that pops up. But that's a story for another day.
Yeah, another time.
But, I really adore this incarnation. Is there anything else that you want to add on him?
I keep going back to it. It's just undeniable
presence. I think this is definitely the anchor for this one. And I definitely think we have to say he's probably the standout.
He is the
performance in his story. Oh, my trouble with Pertwee in the story, though, he feels too Hartnell-esque.
Yes, he's very angry and aggressive. That's something that we had to address right away. I completely forgot to mention it.
Yeah.
But you are right. I've never seen the Doctor just so angry and annoyed.
It seems very out of character for Pertwee because I'm so used to seeing him as this kind of gentle character. And then when he comes across an enemy or a monster, he kind of ruffles his feathers a bit more.
Yeah.
But never really in the case of, like...
just being blatantly annoyed.
Yeah.
Just even when he's not in danger, which, in this case, that's how it felt.
It did, yeah. I guess there is a point where the Doctor is a kind, caring man and the Doctor is a dangerous man. And I guess on that spectrum, he's just not really a nice person to be around at this point in time.
He's just fed up, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just not having it. He was taking it out on the Brigadier and Mike Yates and...
I guess that one of the main factors of that is being exiled on Earth by the Time Lords. When the second Doctor regenerated, he was sent down to Earth. So that's why he's always on Earth.
There you go. That makes sense now.
But, yeah, that's one of the things that I felt was a bit jarring about this story in particular. Like, I've seen quite a bit of Pertwee, and he's not really... like this. I don't think
so. It was one out of the box for Pertwee. He's just ticked off in this story.
I think so. It could also be the departure of Liz Shaw from last season.
Yeah, that makes complete sense, and not fully trusting Joe at this point.
Yeah. Whether it's in the script or...
Maybe Robert Holmes was just having a bad day when he wrote the story. We don't know.
He was just feeling like crap.
Yeah, he just wasn't enjoying himself. He didn't
get his Danish pastry.
Now, for those interested in Terror of the Autons, Tom, is it easy to find at the stores?
Yeah, it is easy to find. You could, the only way of getting it is getting it in the Mannequin Mania box set, you also get Spearhead from Space.
Oh, yes, that's a classic story. A
classic Doctor Who. And yeah, that's pretty easy to find.
More Auton goodness.
Oh,
and did you like the Autons?
I did like the Autons. I felt, even though that they were a bit of a rehash, I definitely felt they were stronger in this story. In opposed to Spearhead from Space. I think that was one of the other key things about this story.
And one thing that seems to pop up on a lot of these early Doctor Who episodes is a bit of controversy. And this episode struck a bit of controversy again.
It did. I think the controversy that came across were the death scenes. Looking back now, in 2015, they look a bit gimmicky.
I thought one of them was fairly horrific, though, where that scientist fell that massive height off the top of those steps. That was pretty brutal to watch.
Yeah, I think it was the BBC television board. I might be wrong. But the BBC television board said, we can't show this on, normal time TV when whole family's watching, kids are watching, and they're going to get scared the crap out of this. Another thing that they picked up on was the misconception of policemen.
Yes.
In his story. There was a sequence that we mentioned before, where there's the two policemen who are really Autons. And the reason why that was so shunned upon was because they were scared that kids were going to be scared of approaching policemen, thinking that they're going to be some kind of alien from outer space or something.
Well, it was a little bit frightening, wasn't it, really? When, John Pertwee's not having anything of it. He just rips the mask off.
Yeah.
It's an Auton, oh my goodness.
Yeah. That reminds me of one of the awesome scenes in this story was in the last part where Roger Delgado walks out and they shoot him on sight. And then they walk up and then they lift up. It's a man in a mask and it's Pharrell.
Yes, it was. It was Rex Pharrell. And he just seemed to be able to get himself through all four parts until the end. He just couldn't make it out in the last 5 minutes.
What did you think of the character of Rex in his story?
I didn't mind him. He just seemed like one of those guys that was just caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time.
He was trapped in the Master's web.
Yeah, that's the thing. I felt, if we're looking performance-wise, he was always kind of outshined.
He was the henchman of the story.
That's right. Every Doctor Who always has to have some good henchmen, and he was just another henchman. But to be honest, he wasn't really all that memorable compared to a lot of other henchmen we've had in times like Nimrod and other ones like that. Yeah. So that's how I felt. So is there anything else that you have to get off your chest about this story?
I don't think there is.
The Terror of the Autons?
It was a bit of a terror. It was a bit of an Auton, but altogether, it was a classic Doctor Who story.
And we had fun, and a special mention definitely goes to the death scene of John. That is probably one of my all-time favourite death scenes. It just makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was... the special effects probably weren't too bad for this time. I mean, let's be fair. What do you think? Were they a bit weak, or did they work?
I think they worked for this story. There was, I think, one of the things that really got me in this story, there was a lot of blue screen used in this story, which was very off-putting for me.
Yeah, it took you out of it a bit.
Yeah, because I'm just so used to either seeing on-site filming, which is in, I think it's in 16mm film.
Yeah, it would be.
And then there's the studio film as well.
Which is usually a lot cleaner.
Yeah, but yeah, this blue screen stuff kind of just put me off a little bit.
Yeah, it looked a bit weird, especially when it had that the Time Lord representative. That looked bad. That just looked, I think that was part of what was so astounding about that. Yeah.
I think it's the only story where they just all out use as much blue screen as they can.
Yeah, maybe when they reviewed it after they released it, got some feedback and went, yeah, this probably isn't working as well as we thought it would.
But in saying that, I can see why they used it. There was a lot of quick shots where they used it, like the woman in the kitchen. And
but was that necessary? Like, the woman could have just been filmed in a kitchen, or they could have made a kitchen. I don't know. I didn't buy it.
They might have blown their budget
on the last season. Maybe, so they had to just kind of do it on the cheap, because that's what it felt like here.
It did, yeah.
And just something that's off the top of my head, the daffodils shooting out the plastic.
That was scary.
That was weird.
I think that's one of the cool things about this episode as well. There was a lot of cool concepts that Robert Holmes was playing around with.
No, they didn't all work, but I felt that one was quite interesting, to be honest.
I could definitely see that coming back into the new series. If they did an Auton story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess the new series had an Auton story with Rose, Christopher Eccleston. That was his introductory episode.
And then they came back for the Pandorica Opens, which was a Matt Smith episode.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it's all crazy. So it's good to see them being reused. Cause absolutely, they're a bit of a classic Doctor Who villain, aren't they?
They are.
The old Autons.
And it seems fitting that the Autons came back for the first episode of the new series, as they were the first monster in colour in the first episode of John Pertwee.
Jeez, yeah. There you are, a bit of trivia. Mm. From the first episode of the third to the first episode of the ninth.
So a bit of a resemblance there. But I reckon we could talk more about that once we reach Spearhead from Space.
Yeah, that's right. Which it's your pick next, so we don't know where we're going.
Who knows?
We don't know what time period we're going. We'll
have to flick through the archive and have a bit of a squeeze.
We'll have to have a bit of a look at the collection and just work it out, I guess.
Yes.
So, final thoughts? Do you want to sum up? What are you going to give it?
I think it hasn't really fazed me. It's really a story to just set up the points of what the next couple of seasons are going to look like. I'm going to give it a 5.
A 5? A 5 out of 10.
A 5 out of 10.
So you really didn't have a good time with this one?
I'm a bit of a fence sitter.
Okay.
I had some laughs, but it didn't really faze me.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, because, I picked this one out, and I went in fresh, and I was just looking forward to seeing it, and I was expecting more than what I got.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give it an extra point because of that death scene of John. I just really, really, really laughed myself silly at that. So I'm going to have to give it a 6 out of 10.
Cool.
You can probably skip this one to our listeners, unless you're like us and you have to watch every single classic episode of Doctor Who.
I'd say watch it.
You'd say watch it?
Just for the purpose of getting to know who the characters are at this point, like the Brigadier, the Master, Joe Grant.
But if you wanted to start yourself just on some classic Doctor Who, you probably wouldn't rush to go to this one right away.
I'd go to Talons of Wing Chun, to be honest.
Oh, that was excellent.
Yeah.
I'm still reeling over how good that episode was. So this has been episode 4 of Who's to Review, reviewing Terror of the Autons. And where can you find us?
You can find us on Facebook at Who's to Review. You can also find us on Blogger at whostoreview.blogspot.com.au. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes and also listen to us on SoundCloud if you have any mail or anything to tell us, or if you have an episode that you would like to hear, you can email us at whostoreviewdoctorwho@gmail.com.
Yes, you can. It's a bit of a mouthful there, Tom.
It is, yeah.
As always, Tom and I were always just wanting to grow this fan page, get a lot more people talking about classic episodes on our Facebook page. So if you know anybody that would be interested in listening to classic Doctor Who podcasts, reviewing some of their favourite episodes maybe when they were growing up, please feel free to share this to them, because we want as many people to listen to this as we can. Because
absolutely.
It's always fun to meet new people that are into Doctor Who and just chat space and time all day long.
Absolutely.
So until next time, next week, it'll be episode 5. What's it going to be? Well, we don't know. It's Tom's pick.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
We'll have to look back into the archive, back in the TARDIS library.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have to go back in time once more.
Yes.
But until next time, have a fantastic evening, night, day, whatever you like.
Just have a good life.
Yeah, enjoy yourself, really. And we thank you again. And we hope to see you soon. Take care, guys.
Goodbye.